Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So cats, popular animal, humans love them, and cinema goers are about to enjoy them in a whole new way as Tom Hooper brings his adaptation of Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical to the big screen. We've talked about this before, but we got some really important revelations about the nature of this film, and I think we should begin this episode by talking about them.
Of course.
There was a presentation at CinemaCon by Universal, and some people who were there were hoping that they might show some footage from Cats, very anticipated film. There was no footage because they're still doing the elaborate CGI effects for the movie that they're using to bring the cats for life. But they did explain that what they're actually doing with this CGI. So firstly, the cats are going to be the size of cats. So the stars of the film will all be shrunk to the size of cats.
Right.
And they've been shooting the movie on sets with like giant chairs and doors and stuff. So that, you know, they're the size of cats.
All proportioned.
Yeah, they're perfectly proportioned. And they're also going to be covered in CGI fur, like, to make them look like cats.
Okay.
So I'm not entirely clear on from this is whether they're going to be like literally lifelike cats. Like they're going to look like the lions in the new Lion King, you know, or the animals from the Jungle Book, if you see what I mean.
Gotcha.
Or whether they're going to be somehow like more like furries, you know, like people who are kind of humans in cat costumes, which is what it's like if you see Cats on Broadway.
Yeah.
Which do you think they're going to go for? What would you prefer?
Here's the thing. Does this make this less or more weird than it was?
I'm trying to think, like,
you know what I mean? Because it's already totally batshit crazy project.
Yeah.
It's nuts as it is, as a musical on stage. Making it in film, you know, it's going to be as weird. But does making it, like, are they going for, like, realism?
Well,
with the singing cats?
The description here in this article on Birth, Movies, Death I'm reading is that it's going to be a combination of costumes, makeup, and CGI accents on the cats' bodies.
More like where the Wild Things are.
Yeah, I guess.
Spike Jonze's movie, which was like a similar thing, right? Sort of CGI faces, but there were people in suits.
Yeah. So they're still going to be like human cats? Like they're still going to basically walk on their feet?
Yeah, like and Meowth from Pokemon.
They'll be like Meowth from Pokemon. But they'll be the size of cats, so that everything else around them will look large, you know, by comparison.
I'm excited, you know. It's mad, this movie.
And they'll all be singing all the time as well. It is like quite a... it's like a real departure from Tom Hooper's like ultra-naturalistic gritty realism that he employed for Les Mis.
Well, we don't know.
Well, we don't know, actually.
Maybe that's why he's been...
That's why they're the size of, that's why they're the size of cats.
He's a realist.
Because that's how big cats are.
He's basically like he's an Alan Clark for the noughties, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's going to be very interesting. I'm hoping that when they're filming it, like all the actors are sort of going on all fours, running about, having to pretend to be cats.
Yeah.
Like George Galloway when he was on Celebrity Big Brother, but like Idris Elba and a variety of other major movie stars.
Should have got George Galloway in.
Now, would you like me to be the cat?
This was a completely innocent improvisation about a human being communicating in human animal language with a cat who wasn't eating its food.
More tickles on the back, yes.
George Galloway is perfect for Cats. Well, it's already been established that he can play the role.
Yeah.
He basically auditioned for it, you know, 10, 15 years ago, whenever that was.
Yeah, and he's not really doing much these days, is he?
No, he's not doing much. All he does these days is tweets about how he wants to rejoin the Labour Party, but they won't let him.
Fair enough.
So I think that's got to be one of my most anticipated movies. This and The Trench, about the big trench from Aquaman.
Imagine if you just like been in a coma for like 30 years and you woke up and this movie's like, coming
this
out.
Is the cinema landscape now.
And you'd be like, what? It's like, why do they make this? And you'd be like, well, it was the longest running show on Broadway. It's like, it was a running show on Broadway beforehand? Nothing about it makes sense.
Yeah. Wait, one thing that does make sense is the premise of this podcast, Danny. So why don't you remind us all what that is?
Certainly. So, if this is your first time, welcome to Film Chat. It's a podcast all about Sam Foster, who runs a small business with his old army buddy, now brother-in-law, Danny Moran. One evening, Sam comes home to find his wife, Cora, acting as if he's an insane stranger. And there's a man who looks exactly like him, called Fam Soster, and he's taken his place, and is playing cards and drinking in his living room. Neither Cora nor Danny, not even Sam's dog, recognize Sam. They think he, rather than Fam Soster, is the double. Meanwhile, his face is shown up on the front page of newspapers as a bank robber in Miami who's made off with $500,000. As Sam flees from the police, he attempts to solve the mystery with the help of Mary Davis, an old girlfriend whom he jilted to marry Cora, and Mary's protective brother, Walt Davis, who was initially skeptical about Sam, but soon kind of agrees with him and tries to figure out the puzzle with him. Is what I would be saying if this was an adaptation of the 1951 film, The Man With My Face. This is, in fact, it's a great title, isn't it? The Man With My Face.
It's a good title.
This is, in fact, just a podcast where we talk about and review films. I'm Danny Moran, and joining me, a man with his own face, Sam Foster.
Thanks, Danny. On this episode of Film Chat, we are reviewing Us, Jordan Peele's follow-up to his hit horror Get Out, which is about a family who are hunted by their exact doppelgangers. Personally, I can't imagine what it would be like to be tethered permanently to someone who sounds like you, thinks like you, behaves like you, speaks into the same sort of microphone as you, and thinks of nothing but how to destroy you. It would be terrifying. I'm trying to make that about this podcast. I don't know if that really lands. We'll also be discussing Joel Coen of the Coen Brothers fame, striking out on his own by making an adaptation of Macbeth. And we'll be talking about the epic trailer for the new Joker film, which explains how Batman's most famous foe came to be the crazy clown we all know and love in the most grown-up, Scorsese-referencing way possible. All that should leave just enough time for me to launch my Kickstarter campaign for my latest film project, which is called UK, spelled UK. The premise is the same as Us, but the family is Remainers, their doppelgangers are Leavers, so it's about Brexit. That's all I've got for that one so far, but I think it's going to be a really good way to talk about Brexit. And I've also got my target for the Kickstarter, which is £250 million. It's a Brexit reference. but also it's going to be an expensive film.
Are the evil doppelgangers like slightly larger because it's not quite half and half? They're all carrying a few more pounds.
Yeah, they're 4 percentage points larger.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an important part of the film.
Brilliant.
You've been tweeting, despite everything I told you about not doing that.
Sorry.
You're not listening to me, and you're just constantly tweeting. So you tweeted, can anyone think of examples of black neurotic characters? The only ones I can think of are from really recent shows. Wondering if this is a recent shift in the kinds of characters being used to explore anxiety, or if I'm just ignorant. And you got a couple of responses here from Brona Fagan. He says, I think it's recent, sadly, e.g. Issa Rae in Insecure, Lionel in Dear White People. Too much media had or has a token black character and thought that was personality enough. Black-focused shows obviously granted more variety. Tia in Sister Sister, Hillary in Fresh Prince. Oldest I can think of is Robert Townsend in Hollywood Shuffle, which was tellingly an independent production, and even then his character's anxiety was rooted in industrial racism. Black characters' motivation is too often a binary to whiteness. So what was it that prompted your question in the first place?
Well, I recently started watching Russian Doll, and that has a black character who's like a bit anxious and is not dissimilar to the character of Chidi, a black character from The Good Place. And it struck me that usually neurotic guys are white, Jewish. That's the sort of stereotype.
Yeah.
And there's been this recent, well, this recent shift where I can think of two examples.
Well, there's also the guy in Veep.
Yeah, that's true. Benjamin Splett.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I thought, I don't know anything about race or representation, so better just wade into this one.
Well, I think, and I think it's an interesting point. I think you can also, it relates in a way a bit to Us, which we'll be talking about later, because that's about a, they're not neurotic, but it's a black family in the kind of, starring in the kind of film and playing the kind of roles that are often taken by white people, basically.
Yeah,
like, kind of like comfortable middle class black family. And like portrayals of black men particularly are often associated with like hyper-masculinity historically, like blaxploitation movies and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, or like action hero characters, or like in Tarantino movies, you know, the black people are always very, very very manly. The black men are, that is. So I think like those characteristics of being more like intellectual or reserved or neurotic or, you know, all the other things that aren't associated with like macho-ness are definitely rarer for amongst black people, or like people like James Baldwin or Harry Belafonte or whatever, not really portrayed very much.
Yeah. I think there was like, well, once in the recurring segment where I wade into something I'm not quite qualified to really talk about.
That's the entire podcast.
I think there's like two things in that sort of neuroticism in comedy, to simplify it, is basically somebody who's their own worst enemy. And if like they didn't stress about these things, their life is fine. So it's like they've got nothing to worry about and yet they worry.
Yeah.
And that is, I know, kind of related to privilege.
Yeah, yeah. Because, that's absolutely true, yeah.
You know, if you're poor, like, you've got no time to worry whether you've made a faux pas at a dinner party because you're too busy just trying to pay the rent.
Yeah.
And also, to speak to what you were saying, it is definitely like a middle class thing. And there's just a lack of portraying a black middle class in movies and TV. And that's why, like, Us is
unusual.
Unusual in that it depicts a black family that can buy a boat.
You get kind of like comfortably well off black families in like Tyler Perry movies.
Yeah.
I guess. But other than that, yeah, it's quite unusual.
That's not great for black representation though. Like, well, I don't know. I would look up Spike Lee being asked about Tyler Perry. His response is pretty funny.
There's a school of thought that says, oh, we're not diversifying our imagery enough in our community yet. There are certain images, whether they be in plays or movies or music, that we flock to, whether we like to admit it or not. I'm wondering, is that just a black middle class saying, oh, no, that's not what we want, but the lot of us wanting it?
Well, I mean, this is a, you know, a complex subject, because each artist should be allowed to pursue the artistic endeavor. But I still think there a lot of stuff that's on today is coonery and buffoonery. And I know it's making a lot of money, breaking records, but we could do better.
I think it's a good point, and it's also one of those things about representation that sometimes when you see things, you just realize that it's something that had been missing before, and it doesn't need to like shout about being you know, like fulfilling some new thing. It's like, but it's just some minor aspect of diversity that you hadn't realized was really missing.
Yeah. I don't know. Long may it continue.
Indeed.
I don't know. Long may it continue. Well done, those two shows. Very similar shows, really.
Like a lot of the conversation around identity politics, if you want to call it that, or like representation and diversity, focuses on like it being like a box ticking exercise and some kind of like secondary thing that's like not really important, and you know, we shouldn't just be looking to make things diverse for their own sake, you know, and that kind of thing. It's like politically limited or whatever, and that's probably, you know, there's definitely some truth to that, but I think part of it is not about like identifying all the areas where there are gaps and then like filling them with every kind of like race and gender.
Yeah,
but just kind of recognizing that if we were in a world that didn't have all this kind of like privilege and discrimination, then you would, all those gaps would fill themselves.
Yeah.
And that when something turns up that is like a bit of an unusual kind of representation and it's really notable, then it just highlights the discrimination that was in place before.
Absolutely.
So it always feels like something to be celebrated. And it's like, there's something that's satisfying as well about these things that happen in ways which aren't like, you know, I mean, films that are made, they're very politically conscious, are obviously good, but it's cool as well when it's just sort of, it's just out there and it's like, you know, the system has allowed this to happen and like maybe that's a sign of progress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did we just solve racism there? I think so. Good job, man.
I think we solved that in episode 52 when... Superhero films announced, casting rumors leaking out. M. Night Shyamalan's film is hated, Paul Thomas Anderson's is fated, Meryl Streep's Oscar tipped, Matt Damon's in a viral vid, Michael Bay's made a mint. That's the news that's fit to print. Joel Coen, brother of Ethan Coen, the Coen brothers. They've made masterpieces together. Why would they ever split up? They've made disaster pieces apart.
They've made disaster pieces apart. So, interesting news story in that Joel Coen is striking out by himself to adapt Will.i.am Shakespeare, is that how you pronounce it? Macbeth, the tragedy of the Scottish play. I've just cursed the entire podcast now, sorry. Oh my God. Macbeth. Ah! And very excitingly, in the cast is Frances McDormand and Denzel Washington, presumably playing Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, respectively. There's obviously been loads of Macbeth adaptations, probably one of the most adapted of the Shakespeare plays. And each of them have been quite acclaimed. Most recently, the Fassbender one, which we reviewed. Which
yeah, it wasn't that good, though.
It wasn't that good, but it got a lot of rave reviews. And there's a very well-regarded Roman Polanski version from the 70s, and Orson Welles did one, and Akira Kurosawa did Throne of Blood, which is the
very
best
good.
One I've seen. So, I mean, it's just basically like the guy has a lust for power, it all goes a bit wrong. That's basically it.
Yeah.
So it's not clear what his take will be, Mr. Coen, as he likes to be called. but yeah, just he's got his wife involved. She was probably around. He was like, you know, probably in bed, like, hey, babes, let's make Macbeth. And she was like, sure.
Maybe she was just saying how much he would love to play Lady Macbeth, and he was like, I will make that happen.
Well, she has already played Lady Macbeth in a stage production in 2016 with Conliff Hill.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Playing Varys in Game of Thrones as the title role.
Oh, cool.
What do you think? Do you reckon it'll be good? Do you reckon maybe Ethan's the real power?
Well, the Coen brothers have done a bunch of adaptations before. They obviously enjoy adapting things.
Yeah, they're kind of interesting in that they have their own, they're kind of a genre unto themselves, but it seems to kind of seamlessly fit with whatever they attach it to.
Yeah, well, they adapt things and they always have its take on them.
Yeah.
You know, which, so they're good adapters as well as makers of their own material. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see how it's going to work. The kind of sensibility of Macbeth doesn't really obviously match the Coen brothers' own movies, I think. I mean, they've made a lot of stuff about like people betraying each other and like violence, you know, and that kind of thing. Like Blood Simple and, you know, many other films. But yeah, I mean, I wonder if he will add some kind of like wry comedy slapstick element to Macbeth. Yeah, is the Lady Killers their worst film? I don't know.
I guess considered to be their worst film.
Yeah, I mean that is an adaptation that. I haven't seen it since it came out, but I remember thinking it didn't really work at all. But they've also done really good ones, like the remake of True Grit. So, and also, like, when you're adapting like a Shakespeare play, does it even count as an adaptation anymore? Like,
yeah.
Or is it just like taking a story that's like become so culturally ubiquitous? It's like doing a version of a nativity or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's like something that's been told and retold so many times that it's not really in the same kind of category as a straight adaptation. I don't know.
I do think the pairing of Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand as a couple is really interesting, and also it's already kind of set itself apart from the other film adaptations by the casting of, well, firstly, an interracial couple is obviously very different, and it's hard to think of any films with an older interracial couple.
That's true.
At all.
As the leads,
Jackie Brown, maybe. Ish.
Well, I think the age of the leads is quite unusual.
Yeah, because it's usually like, you know, lust and power is like a young man's game.
Yeah.
But just by making them older, it's already a bit different. Are they going to be doing Scottish accents? Can Denzel Washington do a Scottish accent?
I mean, I think the more Coen brothers thing to do would be to make it like a modern day adaptation.
Yeah, but it's so like
change the setting or whatever.
Yeah, but how do you do like the forest coming and. You know what I mean? And like
Well, it's not. Things like The Witches, for example, are that kind of eerie representation of like magic or the divine or whatever in the everyday world is something that the Coen brothers have done.
Yeah.
You know, like having all those like characters who represent Satan, for example. Something like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou as well. That, I guess that's probably the most obvious antecedent because that's supposedly adapted from Ulysses.
Fact check. Fact check. It's a live, low audio quality fact check.
I meant to say the Odyssey, Homer's Odyssey, rather than Ulysses, the James Joyce novel. I'm editing the podcast at the moment. I just felt like I had to jump in and correct myself there. Sorry for the low audio quality. I don't have access to my normal microphones at the moment. Anyway, back to the podcast.
But it's obviously a very loose adaptation. So I guess their version of Macbeth would be probably somewhat like that, where like in A Brother Art Thou, the Cyclops is just like gone John Goodman with an eye patch, you know. And then I assume the witches will be a bit like that. Do you remember when the BBC did that thing called Shakespeare Retold?
Yeah.
And their version of Macbeth was like James McAvoy in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And the witches were like garbage men. I think it might be a bit like that, but probably better.
Yeah.
He's just an ambitious chef. So maybe Denzel's going to be an ambitious chef.
Well, I would say that the Shakespeare adaptations I like the most are the ones that have the most clear takes on it. And it's always fun to see the like modern versions and like how they try and sort of like, sometimes it's not the most elegant thing, like in Romeo plus Juliet, he's like, "Get me my longsword, ho," and it just cuts to like a picture of an Uzi in his car or whatever.
Yeah, but it's labeled longsword because that's the brand.
I just, you know, I think that stuff's a lot of fun. So I'm all for it. All for it.
Yeah, me too. Look forward to hearing more about it. You know what else I'm looking forward to?
What are you looking forward to, Sam?
The Joker movie.
What?
Starring Joaquin Phoenix.
So dark, isn't it?
It's so dark.
Gritty.
It's so gritty. So gritty. The trailer for this has just landed. And I would say that it is fulfilling the promise of, you know, what we heard about it ahead of time. So it's an origin story to explain how the Joker came to be. And we were told that it would be influenced by Scorsese, like Taxi Driver and King of Comedy. And I would say it is wearing that influence absolutely on its sleeve.
Influence, wholesale, ripoff.
Whatever you want.
Potato, patata.
Whatever you want to call it. I mean, there's even a bit in the trailer where it looks like he's about to go on stage to present like on TV or something, do kind of a bit of comedy on TV, which is directly lifted from the King of Comedy. But this time the TV presenter is Robert De Niro. So it's like directly nodding to it. Yeah. So how did you feel about this one?
I think it's going to suck.
It got a lot of praise. People were saying that it was really good.
I read a really good piece about it by this writer, Gavia Baker Whitelaw, who writes for The Daily Dot, where she described it as catnip for Batman's toxic masculinity fan base, which I think is like dead on in that it's the sort of people who think like Logan is like a sort of Bergman-esque work of the human condition. And, nastiness and angst equals like serious drama. And she was kind of lamenting how it's such a sort of obvious and slightly canny move by the studio to like do a prestige comic book thing, but it's very much like another film about an isolated white dude, and it's like the most played out genre, and they're not even trying to do something different. Like they're just basically like, what if Taxi Driver was made by somebody who isn't Martin Scorsese and instead of
And he turns into the Joker for Batman.
I saw this other like great like sarky tweet from Nick Pinkerton, this writer, which is like, we all know the most serious role you can play is the clown that tries to kill Batman. And like, I would be completely uninterested in it if it wasn't for Joaquin Phoenix. But I even this performance feels like just the master plus, you know what I mean? It's so in his wheelhouse that like,
yeah,
I don't know.
It feels a bit like I've just seen the entire film.
Yeah.
And there's something also a bit lame about doing, like, taking the Joker seriously, which has, like, already happened in a way, because that was kind of what The Dark Knight did.
Yeah.
And he's not that deep a character, you know? And the thing that was that was quite enjoyable about his portrayal in The Dark Knight was the fact that his history and his internal psychology were not especially important.
Yeah, it's just a sort of force of nature.
Yeah. But like psychologizing him as just a sort of alienated guy who didn't get the mental health treatment that he needed and turned into a mass murderer as a result is just lame. And it's also like, I mean, I, it's kind of this depiction as well. Yeah, it's always centering kind of alienation and misery on like the like middle-aged white guy is very boring by now.
It's also boring, but do you think like this is this the worst or best time to be making a movie about disaffected white males? Not to get too galaxy brain about it. I already have, but
I think that it's very easy to make them reactionary.
Yeah.
Like Falling Down or something, the Michael Douglas movie. It's like a guy who's pushed too far, or like Fight Club as well. Yeah. You know, it's a similar kind of thing where it obviously touches on, you know, real societal problems, but portrays the ultimate victim as the white guy, you know, when that's, there are worse victims.
Sure.
There's something very elevator pitchy about it. It's a bit like it's like watch The King of Comedy once and then watch The Dark Knight and was like, wait a second. He wants to become a famous comedian. The Joker's origin story was that he was a comedian in The Killing Joke. So what if we just remake The King of Comedy, but it stars the Joker? And then they just have done that.
Yeah.
So I'm not especially hopeful. I'll say the director is not that great, right? Todd Phillips?
Yeah, I have no love for the Hangover movies. I never saw War Dogs.
I didn't see War Dogs.
Look, shit. Yeah, the whole DC Warner Bros. People, they've got to stop hiring these like David Ayer, Zack Snyder. Like, he just seems like another one of those angry white dudes who's like watched Heat way too many times and thinks it's like, you know, watches like Taxi Driver, didn't quite get it, you know? Like,
well, in a way, like, these projects are the exact reverse of something like what the movies Jordan Peele is making.
Yeah.
Like, in that they are re-examining these same tired topics about like sad men over and over and trying to convince you how serious and important they are, you know, and how layered with themes and how you know, this is a real film and stuff, but in the most superficial way. Whereas Jordan Peele is making this like really mainstream entertainment that it wants to like entertain you. It's like, take all your friends, eat popcorn, watch my fun movie, you know, and if you want to think about like what it's trying to say afterwards, you know, then do that. You know, you might find it like thought provoking, but I'm an entertainer making like entertaining films. There's something really more sort of honest and straightforward about that than this kind of project, which just seems like this slick exercise in nothing, which is trying to tell you that it's really meaningful.
Can't wait.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it'll be. We're only judging it from the trailer.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's see, but I agree that I'm not particularly optimistic about it.
It's no Cats, is it?
It's not going to be as good as Cats. It's not going to be like The Trench.
Sam and Danny both watched a film and they decided to record a few opinions on the things they saw. You're going to hear them in a moment or so. There could be angry disagreements, but their views are normally quite close.
A joint review shared between two podcast brothers. Do they let one another speak or do they interrupt each other? The light is on, the guys are in. So let the chat begin. Start talking now.
Should we make some like lame jokes? Sam, let's talk about Us.
Us, which we will now review. It's the new film from Jordan Peele, who had a huge hit a couple years ago with Get Out, and is remaining within the horror genre with his second effort. This focuses on a family. Adelaide, played by Lupita Nyong'o, Gabe, played by Winston Duke, her husband, and their two children, Zora and Jason, who are going on holiday to Santa Cruz in California. And while they're out there, they encounter creepy, doubled versions of themselves, who are dressed in red jumpsuits, carry golden scissors, and seem rather hostile towards them and are out to get them. And the film basically follows how they fight back. Here's a clip.
Okay, let's call the cops.
I did. They're 14 minutes away.
What? 14 minutes? Okay. Jason, give me the bat.
What bat?
The baseball bat, the bat. There's one in the
corner. Here, here.
Thank you.
Gabe.
All right, hold on. I got this. Let's try this again.
Gabe.
No, 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 no. All right.
Gabe!
I got this, I got this. Now, I thought I already done told y'all to get off my property, okay? So if y'all want to get crazy, we can get crazy. Now, the cops are already on their way. Hey, 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 hey!
So this is obviously a very highly anticipated film because Get Out was so good. It was like not just a great horror movie, great entertainment, but also a social commentary about the state of America today and race relations. And so I think a lot of people were keen to see how Jordan Peele was going to go next. You know, what devastating, biting social critique would he mix into his fun horror film? And I think it does also do that. So it's clearly is... saying some stuff about America. There's a bit where one of the doppelgangers says, we're Americans, in answer to the question.
That's what I knew was saying something about
who are these people? That's when I knew it was saying something about America. The title as well hints to it being about the US. What? So it's been just about
just
us.
Got that.
Huge. but it isn't saying something which is as straightforward or as obvious. Maybe not obvious isn't the right word, but it's like not as kind of... wrapped up in the nature of what's scary about it. I don't know.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Get Out is a very, very, is a movie with a very, very clear and inescapable message about race. And this film is not as obviously about race, although it is about race a bit. And it's also not a film which is like as clear in terms of exactly what it's saying, which I think is not necessarily a weakness, but is maybe, you know, not what you might have expected. It's unfair, really, in a way, to like sophomoric filmmakers to just compare their movie to their previous movie because no one has made, you know, then you shouldn't make the same film twice, if you
yeah,
know what I mean.
Absolutely. But it is a much looser, more genre-y film, I would say. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had a blast. And it was, this is not like a serious point, but I enjoyed going to the movies to watch a big, crowd-pleasing movie where there weren't any explosions. It was an original film. Wasn't based on anything. I didn't have to watch the previous four things and the cutscenes. It was just a good night out.
It's a good time.
It's a good time at the movies, and there's lots to enjoy about it. Start with the positives. I think he's very in tune with the audience, and it's very light on its feet, the movie, and it does a really good job of like kind of mixing up where the horror is coming from. This isn't a spoiler necessarily, but the opening sort of stab of horror is a bit of a kind of home invasion movie, and you feel like it could easily have all been like that, but like every 20 minutes or so the movie kind of expands a little bit in scope, and it's like the characters kind of adjust to the reality of the horror when the audience do, which I think is maybe a Jordan Peele thing, is that nobody goes into a creepy basement in a Jordan Peele movie when the audience is yelling "Get out." I feel like they're quite an easy gang to root for.
Yeah, I think he clearly has a preference for like active protagonists who take control of the situation, and that they're like His horror is not based around like people being tortured or rendered helpless.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just a very winning family. And, you know, there's room for them. And it's got a very, similar to Get Out, it's got a very pleasing, I know this is all screenwriting 101, but things are set up in act one and they pay off in act three. And like little moments and little like throwaway lines have greater significance later. And all that stuff is just immensely satisfying.
Yeah, all the nuts and bolts filmmaking stuff is really, really well done, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a movie that, like, from the very beginning kind of settles you into it and reassures you that this guy knows exactly what he's doing, you know, has spent a long time ironing this stuff out. And, yeah, it's extremely well made. I think the soundtrack is especially good as well. It's got a real good mix of kind of needle drops, which are quite well chosen, and cool spooky horror score stuff. And the use of the song "I Got Five on It," which is the kind of soundtrack to the trailer, I think is really great. It's like this catchy tune which feels immediately indelibly associated with this movie. And the hook from the song is also, it's just great for the horror soundtrack.
Yeah.
And that's really effective.
Exorcist-esque.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I also think the performances are brilliant. Really kind of ground the whole thing. I didn't realize this, but this is Lupita Nyong'o's first starring role. which says something about the state of the dearth of roles for black women in movies, I guess. But she is great both as the lead and her counterpart, which could easily... I feel that's a hard thing to get right. Like, you know, just be a scary version of yourself.
Yeah.
And it almost... She's really going for it in a way which I think ultimately, like, really works. Like, when she first speaks, there's a few, like, tears of laughter in the screening I was, but then it became terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that's, like, a very compelling antagonist, whereas it could just be a plot device. And I also thought Winston Duke was a lot of fun as, like, a sort of goofy dad.
He's a very Jordan Peele-esque character, isn't he?
I was wondering if he's basically playing Jordan Peele.
He kind of is. Like, that's similar, sort of like, Jordan, what Jordan cadence. Peele does in his sketch shows, really.
Yeah.
I mean, in Key and Peele. But yeah, I thought he was really good. I thought perhaps, I was thinking when I was watching it that, like, are there maybe one too many kind of symbols and objects? The film is, like, absolutely littered with, like, little recurring visual motifs.
Yeah.
In a way that didn't feel completely elegant to me. Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just because I wasn't, like, grasping the significance of everything, but it's absolutely stuffed to the gills with little things to notice in a way, like, even more so than Get Out is.
I don't know if it's just because you've seen Get Out, which really rewards repeat viewings. So, like, when I was setting for us, I was like, okay, I gotta pay attention here, color scheme here, Bible reference, that song's playing. But
the
yeah,
guy's got the Black Flag t-shirt, then another guy's got the Black Flag
t-shirt. Frisbee's got the star in it.
What does it mean? Yeah, it's absolutely full of that stuff. So, I mean, yeah, it's quite enjoyable to watch in a way, you know, trying to piece it together, but I almost found it somewhat distracting that, like, I was playing some sort of like adventure video game where you're, like, collecting items for your inventory and you've got to decide how you're going to use them later. Also, there's more exposition than there is in Get Out. Yeah. There's a more complicated explanation, basically, for what is going on. I mean, Get Out has a somewhat complicated explanation, but this one, I would say, even more so, raises all sorts of kind of logistical and other questions.
Yeah.
And I think you can easily come out of the movie just thinking, so wait, like, what? Like, so how did that work?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, you know, whereas I think how you're supposed to come out of the film thinking is more like, what did it mean? But it raises some really concrete stuff about the mechanics of how the plot works, which are really just a distraction, you know, and that you're not really supposed to interrogate that stuff too much. But yeah, I really liked it. I had a blast watching it. I thought it was thoroughly entertaining. I think maybe it's not quite as good as Get Out, but it's still extremely good, and you should watch it.
Yeah, it's hard to... I feel like if Get Out didn't exist, everyone would be like, this is amazing, this is great, which everyone is sort of saying, but it's almost like that's the caveat.
It's just very hard to meet, you know, if your debut is that strong, it's quite hard to reach the same standard. But
yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what Us is about? You know,
you mean press the spoiler alert jingle?
Press the spoiler alert button.
You want to press that button?
Yes, I'm thinking about pressing the button and then having a conversation about the film's themes, getting a little into it.
Sure.
Okay.
Shall we come back in
12 minutes, if you have not seen Us.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler, spoiler alert! Watch out, spoilers ahoy! Careful, spoiler alert! Spoilers!
So, we now assume you've seen this film.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about it in spoilers.
Switch off if you haven't seen it.
So, the fact that Red, who's Adelaide's doppelganger, has that line about we're Americans, is a real red flag to the audience that this film is about stuff.
Course.
You know, it's not, it is both that kind of like home invasion movie that kind of turns into a disaster movie and flicks through various other horror genres, but it's also clearly telling you something about America, about what's going on. There's this sort of obvious reading about the fact that the doppelgangers are literalizing the idea of you being your own worst, someone being their own worst enemy, and like, you know, the baggage of your past coming back to haunt you, and you being confronted by your own demons, that kind of thing. Then the fact that the scope of the film expands into this mass uprising across America of this kind of underclass of red attired people also makes the film in some way about America's crimes and the buried past and, you
sure,
know,
the quintessential founding of all American horror, right? It's the
right, exactly. America, I think this is actually
America
something we've talked about before.
Ground,
yeah, exactly.
Right? It's built on the massacre of Native Americans and then the blood of slaves, so... the blood will out.
Yeah, it's actually only now that I'm talking about it that I'm wondering if that red, is that red supposed to be reference that? Would that be actually problematic to associate there?
No, I don't know. It's obviously a deliberate color scheme. Like Get Out was all blue. This one's all red.
Maybe but the red thing white. Is also like they look a bit like prisoners. They're kind of in prison style jumpsuits. Like they're not orange, but they're red instead. But
yeah, and I think he also talked about how it was. There's lots of kind of references to Michael Jackson in it.
Which yeah, what does that mean?
Well, in an interview, Jordan Peele said he thought Michael Jackson represents duality, which is like the big theme of the movie. In that Michael Jackson is. I mean, now even more so because of these revelations about him. But in the 80s, he's like somehow masculine and sexual, but also like a child. He's white. He's black.
Yeah.
He's 45. He's permanently like 7 years old. And it's she at the beginning, the girl has like a thriller t-shirt and the red has got like one glove like Michael Jackson. So I'm not sure if there's it's more just he had this idea and just went with it for the production design. Then.
Yeah. Well, I think that kind of ties a bit into one of the themes that was raised. I was listening to the Still Processing podcast about this, and they mentioned, Wesley Morris mentioned on that, this concept of double consciousness, which is this idea that was come up with by a black thinker called W.E. Du Bois. And it's the idea that it kind of it can apply to any kind of oppressed category, but it's the idea that you are both... you have this double consciousness on the one level of yourself in society and like on another level of the way that society views you. Yeah. So that if you're a black American, it's you on some level you are aware of the way in which this like majority white society views and treats you, and that puts you at a remove from it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that it's hard to escape from. And that metaphor as turned into this doppelganger thing is quite interesting, because it's quite nice the way the film functions in a sort of almost like an intersectional way to be about class and race, because those things are hard to separate anyway, but especially for America they're extremely tied together. And the inequality that exists in America right now and the level of oppression and stuff and its history, it cannot escape like the racial element.
Yeah, of course.
So on one level the film is about this like comfortably well-off black family and the sort of black doppelgangers that kind of represent that like haunted sense that you have this like past of people who were like oppressed and and brutally exploited in order to generate the wealth that you are now enjoying. So there's that there's that strange element of being part of American society and having all the appliances and the summer home and stuff like that, but also being conscious that your own ancestors like suffered enormously, to sort of put you in that position. And I think that the way that is explored is quite interesting in terms of how the different family members react to what happens. So the kind of clearest reactions come from Adelaide and from Jason, the son, and they have like quite opposite responses to it. And Adelaide is terrified of this like thing returning to like haunt her, but then once it happens she kind of gets into immediately like warrior mode.
Yeah.
And it's part of the film's kind of moviness in a way that the family is like starts fighting back pretty quickly, but I also think it's part of its social commentary that they're pretty comfortable with violence. And actually, yeah. the most brutal stuff in the film, like the most brutal violence that's committed, is committed by the family, not by the doppelgangers, the tethered or whatever.
Yeah.
Like the daughter, like when the daughter kills one of the twins, like Elizabeth Moss's twins, she like absolutely wrecks her with this golf club, really brutally, and then doesn't show any kind of like remorse about it. And Adelaide is very single-minded in her desire to kill her counterpart.
Well, it's us or them, right?
It's us or them, exactly. So that's her mindset. But then, like, the way that Jason acts throughout the film is he recognizes much more the connection between the two. The fact that he is the one who says, it's us.
Yeah.
And also he has something of a bond with his own doppelganger. The scene where they're, like, in the cupboard together and they're kind of playing together.
Yeah.
Is not there's no like equivalent kind of interaction between the the main version and the tethered version, like, elsewhere in the film. And it's sort of interesting as well in the way in which Adelaide's doppelganger, Red, is kind of this, like, sort of intellectual of her class, you know? That, like, in that, like, exposition section, which is the one that doesn't really make a lot of sense because you end up thinking, like, where they get all the rabbits, where they get their clothes, and so on and so forth. It's I think, like, what it's trying to get at is this story of, like, it's like this underclass which develops a kind of intellectual who raises the their consciousness,
radicalizes.
Makes them conscious of their own oppressions and leads a revolution.
Sure, Spartacus
style. The film depicts a revolution. Yeah. Whereas Adelaide is not reflective about it at all and just sees it as this, like, life or death struggle. And then it kind of, the way that their fight goes at the end, it's almost like Red allows herself to be killed, you know. She sacrifices her whole family for this, like, cause. And the end of the film, Jason is sort of looking at his mom in a slightly suspicious way, or like a concerned way, almost like he has more of a sense of what's really at stake and what's really going on, whereas, like, the rest of the family just wants to survive and doesn't want to think about what's actually happening. I also was thinking that it's significant that he notices the guy on the beach as well, because, like, part of the, you know, if it's mapping this underclass versus the, like, privileged class thing, you know, part of that reality is the fact that people ignore the evidence in front of their faces of this, like, total injustice and stuff. So the guy on the beach, who has presumably already committed his, like, murder and then gone to join the line, looks like he's the first one, you know? He kind of gets out a bit earlier than everyone else, kills the guy holding the Jeremiah sign, and then goes and stands on the beach. But everyone else is like, oh, it's just a crazy guy. There's probably a million of those in Santa Cruz at any given time. But, like, the boy notices him. So he's, like, much more conscious to, like, the world that's around him. Also, the thing about, like, Hands Across America, I was sort of wondering about what this is about. So, like, I hadn't heard of this program before. But it was this thing that they did. It's referenced right at the beginning of the film. They show this television advert for Hands Across America. And then the girl's wearing a Hands Across America t-shirt. I think she puts the Thriller t-shirt on over her Hands Across America t-shirt. And it was this event in 1986, the year of the flashback, that was, like, aimed at raising money for the homeless. And they did this huge stunt of getting people to join hands. And stretch, like, far across America, and they had millions, literally millions of people involved in it. Like, it was this huge thing, and they raised something like $30 million over it. But, like, Ronald Reagan was, like, part of the line, like, holding hands and stuff. So it was this huge event. And in a way, there's a neatness to the fact that the tethered do it in the end of the film, because it's another mirroring. You know, that they copy the above world.
Yeah.
So this thing happened in the 80s, and then when they get out, they're doing something which is a copy of what the above world had done. I guess there's a lot of different ways you can interpret it, but the way that I sort of took from it is that, like, this thing in the 80s, which obviously didn't really solve any problems and was also, like, sufficiently apolitical that, like, Ronald Reagan could be involved in it.
Right.
Is this kind of meaningless gesture politics.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the Make Poverty History campaign or something like that, which, like, did not make poverty history in any way. Because it's just about raising money and distributing it through charity rather than dealing with, like, structural problems. Whereas, like, when the tethered do it, it's like it seems more like a symbol of class solidarity, you know?
Yeah.
We've emerged, we're taking over, and, like, we are actually more unified and have a sense of common cause, you know, than you do.
Absolutely. And it's also a case that she watched as a kid and she just took it literally in a way. She's like, you know, can't see through the bullshit of it.
Yeah.
Just because, like, kids just trust things. I'm like, yeah, okay, of course, cool, great idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she was, you know, the wide-eyed innocence of the child.
I think you can also say something as well about the that kind of double consciousness idea also existing for the tethered themselves, and that weird kind of thing where they're like, it's like make-believe kind of theater that they're doing of the above ground world.
Yeah.
Which in a literal way is rather silly. And as you were pointing out to me, like, what if one of them gets on a plane? Like, how do the tethered do that?
Yeah.
That's all quite silly, but there's also, you know, you could read that as being a kind of metaphor for the way in which the people who are the most oppressed in society are also forced to, or like highly aware of what is going on in what's considered to be like the mainstream of society, you know, that their excluded world is not really part of society, or is, like, pushed to the side of it. And so you know, you're surrounded by symbols of like comforts and happiness and people going about their day in its own way, and you're kind of part of the society that's doing that, but also being really aware that you can't ever fulfill that. So it seemed seemed like a sort of a representation of that. But anyway, but I just thought, I was like, as I was dwelling on it a bit more, I was a bit like, this is actually quite a rich and interesting...
Yeah, I think that was my sort of... When I left the movie, I was a bit hung up on the logic, but that kind of faded away and like the sort of themes emerged, which maybe is the wrong way round which Jordan wanted. But nevertheless, I found it quite a rich... thing to mull on.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's definitely
rich,
very interesting.
To mull on.
It's a rich thing to mull on.
Yeah,
yeah, a rich bone to chew on, like a sort of film critic dog.
Ooh, time for a break from all the film chat. Have a cup of tea, maybe make a quick snack, and telephone a friend so you know where she's at. Right, that's enough. Now back to film chat.
Okay, folks, that's it for this episode of Film Chat. If you had any thoughts about us
and about
us, please do send them in, because I feel like this is a fun movie to talk about. So get those thoughts into us.
I'm curious
to hear other people's takes and, you know, how they reflected upon the film. Next week, Danny will be reviewing The Sisters Brothers.
Yep.
That is currently out.
Jack Audiard movie.
I don't know what I'll be reviewing. Maybe the same thing if I see that.
I thought you'd be seeing Shazam or something. You love those comic movies.
I'll be seeing Shazam, and I'll be telling you why it's the best film ever. I'll be reviewing the Avengers Endgame Marvel UK 1 minute trailer.
Is it different?
Different footage. With all new footage.
Yeah.
Gave away a lot of interesting stuff in that trailer.
Ooh.
A lot of interesting stuff. I'll be doing a 25-minute breakdown of that.
Thanos. I hope he just wins again.
Oh no, I want him to beat Thanos.
No, it'd just be great, wouldn't it? If he just
That'd be awful.
He just snaps his fingers again and there's like 25%.
That'd be so sad.
No, that'd be great.
Oh, that would really put me in a bad mood. alright, that's it. Speak to you later, guys. Bye.
Bye bye.
I wish I had a home.
And this earth, it smells so sweet.
I like to have more fruity.
Cradles us all.
I like to have a home, Dad.
Sweetheart.
Got no people, only us.
So we must learn to love each other. See that man over there? He's my brother.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.